FM, streaming on the Prime Media Plus app
and DStv channel 856.
Well, the International Trade Administration Commission saying it now wants to implement measures that will make it illegal to buy and sell scrap steel in cash. That's part of measures to stay off the Financial Action Task Force grey list. ITAC also wants to change the price preference system for scrap metal. At the moment, scrap metal cannot be exported unless it's been offered to domestic customers at a discount to international prices. ITAC wants to cut that discount for scrap steel from 30% to 25%. The Chief Commissioner at ITAC is Ayabonga Tawe. Mr. Commissioner, good evening. This is a technical area, but there's an obvious first question. How would you enforce a ban on selling scrap steel for cash?
Well, firstly, good evening to you, Stephen, and I think Ayabonga is just fine. I think when everyone calls me Commissioner, it makes me feel a lot older than I certainly am. And thanks once again for giving us a chance to speak to yourselves this evening. Really, I think the point we are making is that the scrap that otherwise would have been destined for export and would require, under our export control regulations, a permit from the Commission, if it is indeed offered in a duly completed offer to the domestic buyer, then that transaction must not happen in cash. We can't enforce what other transactions people might undertake, but I think we must clarify that the amended export control guidelines we had issued relate to scrap that would otherwise be destined for export, which cannot be cleared at our ports of exit without a permit from ITAC.
Okay, so this is, I have to put this in here, this is for scrap that's being exported legally.
This is for scrap that is intended for legal export rather than illicit export.
Okay. Obviously, then you would be able to get the transactions. You would require proof of the transactions and you'd be able to take it from there. But what does that buy you? Why is it so important?
Well, I think there are two related things. One is the one you just mentioned in your introduction, Stephen, which is that in line with some of the broad questions around the FATF and the grey list, there is this need for a lot more of these transactions on controlled metals to be undertaken through the national payment system. But there's even one that predates that FATF process, which is the export control regulations that were issued by the minister in November 2022 and the subsequent regulations that were issued by the Civilian Secretariat for the Police Service in July of 2024, all of which, in addition to having registration for those who dabble as merchants in scrap under the Secondhand Goods Act, so they have to register in line with what the Civilian Secretariat of the Police requires. But there's an additional requirement now, which is the creation of a registration regime and a requirement for registered buyers who purchase copper scrap, ferrous scrap, and so on to be registered in a manner that the police would prescribe. And as part of these two mechanisms, there was already signaled in 2022 that the government is moving towards a process where some of these transactions in the trade in scrap will and have to be soon undertaken through an electronic system. So really, this is kind of the first step in that process to say the guidelines prior to this amendment would have allowed for cash on delivery. We're saying under the auspices of the PPS, which deals with scrap that otherwise would be destined for export, that cash on delivery is no longer acceptable. And we would prefer that participants in that marketplace undertake their transactions using electronic channels and channels that can be picked up in the national payment system.
Okay. All right. I mean, that does make sense, I suppose. You also want to cut the discount. This is the price preference system for scrap steel. You want to cut the discount from 30% to 25%. What do you believe the consequence of that will be?
Well, I think maybe let me give a bit of context, because this is not a novel development. Let me take your mind back to 2013, Stephen, where the then Minister for Economic Development and later the DTIC Minister introduced, following a lot of pressure, and I think if you read the Competition Tribunal finding on the scrap cartel, a lot of chaos in the scrap market, a mechanism that would ensure when global prices for all manner of scrap are favorable, that would at least balance the incentive to export with making available to domestic millers and foundries some of the scrap that is required, especially high-quality scrap. I mean, if you think of stainless steel producers who require heavy sections from rail and automotive grade scrap as input material in their fabrication exercise. In instances where the prices of that type of scrap is very high globally, on the back of demand from India and Turkey primarily, then there's a difficulty of finding the scrap. And so the discount was really intended, one, to say, look, under the PPS, if you are wanting to export first for a defined period, make an offer to the domestic industry to say, I've got this scrap, I want to export it. But second to that, the mechanism sought to de-link the domestic price at which that scrap would be offered from the prevailing global price for scrap in order to ensure that the domestic beneficiaries of that scrap would have it on relatively more favorable terms than otherwise would have been the case if you had export parity pricing. And so in a sense, what has happened here, that discount started in 2013 at 20%. And what you had at that time was the logistics costs for the transportation of the scrap falling on the buyer. And so the decision was then taken in January 2015 to say the 20% actually in effective terms is not 20% if the logistics costs fall on the buyer. That decision was then made to shift the discount to 30% in order to factor in that the buyer was the one who had to shoulder the logistics costs. A later decision was made in 2021 in the export control regulations to amend that, to shift the locus of the transportation costs onto the seller. And a corresponding adjustment was not made, one, to that effective discount. And second to that, our own assessment of what the effective depth of that discount has been, if one factors in transportation and logistics costs, is what really has necessitated this adjustment. It certainly hasn't made a lot of people happy, but I guess in policy terms, when nobody is happy, as I've said, that's often the best outcome.
Well, maybe. But I mean, the other thing is we've had the system, as you say, from 2013. Despite that, we've consistently lost jobs in the steel sector. I mean, is the intervention as a whole working?
Well, I think let's analyze, because the steel sector is not a homogenous space, nor is the technology platform in steel homogenous. We have lost jobs in the steel sector. The attribution for some of those job losses is an outcome of chronic rather than episodic overcapacity in the steel product market globally. It's not unique to South Africa. Go to Dunkirk and even parts of France, where the same primary integrated producer in South Africa is also culling jobs, and in many other parts of the world. So it's a global issue. It's not unique to South Africa. But in addition to that, some of the capability we have lost, and I think this is where we must also be sensitive to the point that those who use blast furnaces have been making. They've been saying, look, this mechanism gives a fillip to those who use scrap as input material into fabricating steel. And they are arguing that that is at the expense of the ore producers. We are aware of that. And I think in the economic analysis we have undertaken, it is about finding that balance, because we also have a policy objective here, Stephen, which is to green how it is that we produce steel. So we've got to balance the fact that we've got iron ore reserves that we must beneficiate in blast furnaces, much like those that sit at AMSA. But we have to kind of balance that with ensuring that scrap as a strategic material contributes to the greening of our own steel sector and the building of capabilities in electric arc furnaces, which have a much lower emission profile than iron ore-fed steel mills. And it's a balance that must be struck. But I think the story around the job losses has many contributing factors. And I think to scapegoat the PPS is to really build a straw man in order to bash a policy program. And it's understandable, of course. These are the interests at times that are far from altruistic of market actors.
Ayabonga Qhawe, thanks very much indeed. Chief Commissioner of the International Trade Administration Commission. If you're in the steel industry, 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.
The Money Show on 702.
Monday to Friday, 6 to 8 p.m.